everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Bondor, and I am a best-selling author, mentor, mindset and manifesting coach, and public speaker. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, we teach, and then we help others. Hello, everybody. My name is Shannon Mondor, and I want to welcome my very special guest today, which is Al Richards. So, Al, I want to thank you. So, welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. How are you today?
I am well, Shannon. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show. And I just want to give a shout out to Steve for connecting us. So, thank you, Steve, for connecting Shannon and I. Very grateful.
Yes, I'm very grateful too, because he as well has opened up many doors for me too. So, and of course, you and I, we've just connected. Yeah, we could just talk for hours on end.
Yeah. Easy.
It's easy. So yeah. I would like you to share a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and then if you can go into your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from Salt Lake City. My parents moved into a little town called West Jordan, which is about, I don't know, probably 15 miles or so southwest of downtown Salt Lake City. I was 9 when we moved out here. It was just all farmland, alfalfa fields, wheat fields, grew up on an acre. We had ducks, turkeys, chinchillas, pheasants, dogs, cats. I mean, we had it all. And it was a really great place to grow up in. You know, it was just basically like a small farm town. Graduated from high school in 81. And when I took off, once I graduated from high school, I took off, started working construction. I wanted to get out from underneath my mom and dad's wings. I wanted to make my own rules instead of living under their rules. And took off and ended up going to Colorado. And I was working construction in there and met up with some other guys that we hooked up and some of us kind of room and board together, right? Even though rent was fairly cheap. I mean, we paid like $350 for a 2-bedroom apartment, which is unheard of nowadays.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, we were 17, 18, 19-year-old kids and really enjoyed partying, right? We loved to drink. All I did was really, at the time, just smoke pot. And I didn't even smoke pot until 2 weeks before I graduated from high school. So I was fairly clean and just kept my nose to the grind and didn't get in any trouble because I was scared to death to get in trouble because of what my dad would do to me. And one night, one of my buddies comes over and he goes over to the cupboard and he's like, "Where's your saucers?" And I tell him, and he gets his saucer and he comes back out, sits on a coffee table, and he's like, "Where's everyone else?" And I'm like, "Oh, they went to Greeley to go to one of the nightclubs out there." And I didn't want to go to any nightclub, so I'm just sitting here by myself. And he goes, "Well, let's party, you know?" And I says, "All right, I'll get the whiskey out and the tequila and, you know, and start mixing drinks." And I'm like, "What's the saucer for?" And he reaches in his pocket and pulls out this like envelope, little baby envelope, and he starts scooping some white stuff out on it. I'm like, "What the hell is that?" He's like, "Oh, it's cocaine." I was like, "What?" And he says, "Yeah, it's cocaine. You want some?" I'm like, "Oh, heck no. And it literally about 2 to 3 weeks before this happened is when the news came out that John Belushi overdosed, which was a very popular comedian, was on Saturday Night Live and all kinds of different movies, you know, and he had overdosed on cocaine. So this stuff was really scaring me. Well, as the night went on and I started drinking a little bit more, I decided to try it out. And as soon as I did that first line, I was in love. I was like, "Oh my heck, this stuff is flipping amazing." I just felt incredible. What I didn't know, though, Shannon, is what that first line of cocaine was going to do to my life down the road by quite a few years. So to fast forward, we still partied. We had a good time. we ended up leaving Colorado, went to Phoenix, Arizona, rented a house. We had a swimming pool. We had kegs every Friday and Saturday night. We had mushrooms, coke, pot, hash. We had all kinds of stuff. It was just a huge party. Everyone we worked with would come over to our house, swim. We'd be up till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, sleep a few hours, get up, clean up, start the party all over again for Saturday night. However, we just didn't really touch a lot of stuff during the week. I ended up coming back home to Salt Lake City and got out of the construction stuff and started working for a manufacturing company. And we manufactured laundry detergent. And I got hired on as a mechanic to work on the packaging equipment. And I really enjoyed the work, even though I didn't know much about packaging lines because I worked construction. I picked things up pretty quick. And within a short period of time, I was the lowest paid mechanic. Before I knew it, I was actually passing the mechanics that was there before me. And within about a year or so, I ended up being a lead mechanic over the night shift. And then as time went on, I was just kept excelling, got put on day shift. I had a lot, you know, it was kind of stressful because when a machine went down, you had to get things up and running really quick because thousands of dollars was being lost if production wasn't going out the door. Long story short, in 1997, we built a plant in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and the production just wasn't happening as good as they wanted to. So they started flying mechanics from Salt Lake to there. And one day I was asked, you're going to go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and you're going to go out there and you're going to help them get these machines running. And I didn't even really realize it. Every time I flew to Kentucky, their production went up. And as soon as I left, their production would drop. I was going through a divorce with my daughter's mom at the time, actually had already gone through it. And it was really, really nasty. And every time I went to go pick up my kids, it was a knock down, drag out fight. And I could see it was really affecting my kids. My daughters were fairly young. And I'm like, I don't want them to be around this. So they offered me a position there at Bowling Green. And they offered me a management position. And it was really good money. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to leave my kids, but I'm going to go. And I did. I took off. 1998 is when I got there. I worked. This is no lie and no BS. I worked 7 days a week for a year and a half straight. Saturdays, I'd only put in about 6 hours. Sundays, I'd put in around 3 to 4 hours. We went our production from about 150,000 cases a month to where we were doing over 900,000 cases. Now, we installed a couple more packaging lines, of course. You know, it just wasn't the same machines. We added some more. But once the mechanics got trained, I had a lot of time on my hands. I'd come into work for 2 hours, go play golf. Cell phones were just coming out. I had that huge brick cell phone that you used to see on TV that people in their convertibles calling and thinking they look pretty cool, you know, and, you know, walk sideways because it weighs so much hanging off your pocket.
Oh, my husband, it just makes me laugh. Oh, my God.
I know, right? So I'd go play golf and then I'd call in and check things. And they're like, yeah, everything's running good, boss. So, okay, I'd go play another 9 holes. And, you know, anyway, about 2 years went by. I hadn't seen my kids. I always talked to them on the phone. I came back to Salt Lake for a vacation, a 2-week vacation, and I spent 2 weeks with my daughters. A girl I was dating came with me. And when it was time to go home, Shannon, back when you could actually, the people who you were with could go to the boarding area and sit with you, right? They didn't have to stay back. The look on my daughters' faces when I had to leave again just broke my heart. Mm-hmm. I literally cried from Salt Lake all the way back to Nashville because I missed them. It took me about a year to come back. I finally got back to Salt Lake City. They put me over the fabric softener department. Fabric softener is the fabric softener sheets that you throw in your dryer. And within about 6 months of that, they decided to put me over a couple other packaging lines, liquids, powders. Shortly after that, I was over a couple more. Then I ended up being over the parts room. Then they put me over all the outdoor maintenance. Then they put me over housekeeping. So all this happened within about a year and a half to 2 years. I ended up having about 43 employees that worked underneath me, every nationality you could think of. I definitely had to learn different cultures. I had to learn how to speak to people differently, because how I would speak to you, I could not speak that way to somebody that was, you know, from the Middle East, because it would be very offensive to them. I had tons of projects coming at me left and right. Liquids department was really booming at the time. We were always changing things. New parts had to be made for the machines. The stress level that I had was just, I mean, to the top. I was working 14, 15 hours a day, Monday through Friday. And my wife, she ended up working for a car dealership. And she came home on a Friday one night. And she goes, "Hey, they're having a party. You know, would you like to go?" I'm like, "Yeah, I could really use to go to a party. I just got to get my head out of the game." And I went to this party and I ended up meeting some of the guys and stuff. And one of the guys come up to me and he's like, "Hey, so you party?" And I says, "Well, yeah, I party. I'm here at your party, right? This is your party." And he goes, "No." And he's like, "Do you really party?" You know, and he's doing this. And I'm like, "Oh, holy cow, man, it's been a long time since I've done that, right?" And I remember how it made me feel. And I says, yeah, absolutely. He goes, "Well, come on with me." So we go back in the back room and I do some lines. That same feeling came over me again, Shannon. I'm like, "Oh my gosh." For the first time in a little over the year that I was back at the plant, well, actually at about 6 months, not even a year, I had completely forgot about work. It wasn't even on my mind at all. I was literally having a great time enjoying myself. A couple weeks later, I wanted to feel that feeling again, right? I happened to get the guy's information, called him up, said, "Hey, you know, do you know where I could get any of that?" And he goes, "Yeah, you can get it for me because I sell it." And I'm like, "Oh, hell, I didn't know that." And he goes, "Yeah, how much you want?" And I told him, I says, "Well, I don't want it till Friday." And he goes, "Okay." He goes, "Well, call me Friday and I'll get you hooked up." Remember when I said that first line of cocaine at 17, I didn't know where it was going to take me years down the road. It got to the point to where I was calling him about every other week. Then it was every week. 14, 15 hour days. Friday came. 2 o'clock, I was already on the phone making arrangements. 3 o'clock, I was punched out. I was gone. I spent 8 years snorting cocaine and drinking every Friday and Saturday night. That's the only time I touched it, was Friday and Saturday. The girl who I was dating at the time, who is now my wife, I dated her for 3 years and she had no clue I was snorting cocaine. She knew I was drinking and she never could figure out. She's like, "How could you drink so much and not get drunk? Or I could see you starting to get real drunk and then all of a sudden you're not as drunk." And I'm like, "I don't know. I guess I could just handle my booze, right? I just know how to handle my booze." Hadn't been drug tested, Shannon, in 15 years. One day I walked in and guess what happened? I got drug tested and I failed. The crazy thing is the first day when they told me I needed to be drug tested, I come up with an excuse. I went to my boss. I'm like, "Look, I got all these projects going on. I cannot leave today. I just cannot." And he goes, "All right, but tomorrow you're going to go." As soon as I got off work, I was calling everyone that I knew. "Hey, how can I pass this drug test? You know, oh, pickle juice. Oh, cranberry juice. Oh, try this, try that." I was doing everything they said. Went into the next day, worked, went and did the UA. A week went by. I didn't hear anything. I thought, maybe I beat it. Two weeks. Yes.
On those weekends then, when after you had that drug test, so you would have had it like on a Tuesday or whatever. So that weekend coming up, because you didn't hear anything, did you go out and party again?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. You bet. I was on the phone. I was on the phone again.
You thought you were in safe zone.
Yep.
You were in safe zone.
I was. And you know what was crazy is like a lot of us who are in that spot, all day Friday, I was telling myself, nope, I'm not going to do it. Nope, I'm not going to do it. I am not going to do it. Look at the clock. Oh my gosh, it's 2 o'clock. Grab my cell phone. Hey, buddy, I'm going to meet you at 3:30 here, right? And yeah, so I still did it.
And that would have been enough to scare the shit out of me.
You would think that it would. Yeah. Me too. I mean, I was scared. I was still scared.
Yeah, wow.
Two weeks goes by, nothing. I'm like, I beat it. Holy cow, I beat it, right? Because I would hear something by now.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing that weekend, partied again. The next week, I think it was on a Tuesday, I'm in my office and I'm having a meeting with some of my mechanics, my day shift mechanics. And I hear over our radios, because we carried radios, I heard security call my boss and they said, Debbie Mayer needs to see you ASAP. Debbie Mayer was the manager for human resource. Instantly, my blood went to my feet. I knew right then and there exactly what it was about. About 20 minutes later, my boss shows up at my office and he goes, oh, you're having a meeting. I said, yeah. And he goes, how much longer? I'm like, we've got about 5 minutes. He goes, wrap it up quick. So I hurry and wrap up the meeting. My guys leave. He says, you need to come with me. Now, as being someone in management as well, I did that exact same thing to some of my employees.
Mm-hmm.
Now it was my turn.
It's your turn.
We went to HR, sat down. Debbie Mayer goes, Al, I'm just in shock. She goes, it took so long because I didn't believe it. I actually sent it back to be tested again because I didn't believe it. Because I was a good employee. I always got, 4.5s and 5s on every one of my evaluations. Always. I did not miss work. The only time I called in work to miss work was to play golf. I came in sick. I was there all the time. I had like 985 hours of PTO because I never used it.
Mm-hmm.
They suspended me. And they said, you're suspended until we figure out what we're going to do. My wife, who knows me very well, next day I don't go to work. She's like, why aren't you going into work? I'm like, I just don't feel good. Okay. She comes home. You're still in bed? I'm like, yeah, I told you, I don't feel good. Next morning, you're not going to work again? No, I don't feel good. Comes home, you're still in bed? Yep, I'm still in bed. I'm depressed.
Yeah.
The third day, same thing happens. But this time when she comes home, she walks right in the bedroom, threw her stuff on the bed, and says, all right. This is bullshit. What are you hiding from me? Because she goes, I have been with you 3 years and I've never seen you miss one day of work in 3 years. You're lying to me. What the hell is going on? She had only been my wife for a month and a half, Shannon. And I had to tell her I failed a drug test. That killed her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It killed her. It took about a week and a half for them to decide what they wanted to do with me. They called me. I came in. My manager fought for me. The plant manager fought for me. Unfortunately, the owner of the company who sold the business a year before this happened no longer owned the company, because I really believe if he had, he would have slapped me on the wrist, probably tested me every month, and I still would have been there. But because of the money that I was making, and it was a corporation now, they wanted to set an example. I lost 24 years of a career that I worked my butt off to work myself up the corporate ladder to where I was making really good money. The stress, I wasn't expecting the stress that came with it, especially with the Bowling Green, except I had that gap for the other year and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
To relax, I didn't want the constant beating that I was getting there. And I lost my job a month and a half after my wife and I got married. And they gave me some severance. My manager and plant manager fought for that, and they did give me some severance. I used all my retirement, all my PTO hours that was saved up and everything just to keep paying bills, because I had decided I was not going to work for another corporation ever again, because it wasn't my fault. It was their fault, right? They fired a good employee. I was a role model employee. And I'm not saying that just to pat myself on the back. Literally, I was a role model employee. I worked my ass off for that company. I trained a lot of mechanics. I was always there. I was on the emergency response team. I was on all kinds of other different things, the first aid. I was at training, hazmat, all that stuff. And I decided, took me about 2 weeks of depression. My wife finally came home again and said, I've had enough of this. You're better than this. You're going to start painting the living room. We've got all these gift cards from our marriage. We're going to go find some paint. I said, nope, I'm happy just laying here in bed feeling sorry for myself. Slowly but surely, I finally started getting up, started doing some sanding, a little bit of masking. And it took me about 3 weeks, and I finally had the living room painted. And I really started coming out of my depression a little bit, and I really started thinking about me. Mm-hmm. A friend called me up wanting to find out what happened. I wouldn't tell him. And he came out and he says, you know, Al, he says, there's not many people that we worked with that trusted you. I'm like, what do you mean? I never stole from you. I always treated everyone with respect. And it's like, because everyone knew you as a liar and a manipulator. And I'm like, what? No way. No way. I'm not a liar and a manipulator. And he goes, well, all right. Look at it how you want to see it. But that's how we saw it, right? And that really hurt. And I really started doing some really deep soul searching, Shannon. And I realized he was right. He was 100% right. All I gave a crap about was Al Richards. I would do anything I could to get my way. I would lie to you. I could stare you straight in the eye and I could come up with something that quick and make you believe it. Because if it got me what I wanted, I did my job. And I became that as a kid growing up. And I'm not blaming this on my dad, okay? I got my butt kicked for a lot of stuff. To keep from getting my butt kicked, I learned how to lie. I learned how to work around things, right? Not realizing I was mastering my craft as I grew older and older, and not realizing I took it into my adulthood.
Isn't this funny, Al, how we had just talked about this just prior to me pressing record?
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Never would I have guessed that you were about to say this. And yeah, this conversation that we had has now played into this role. Oh, this is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's, it was a shock to me even, Shannon, right? So I started doing some really deep soul searching, and I'm like, you know what? Okay, I'm done. I'm not going to be this person anymore. I mean, I got goosebumps on my arm even just thinking about it, because that's how I was looking at it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm not going to go work for a corporation again. I don't know what direction I'm going to go. I have no clue where I'm going to go. But by hell, I am not going to go backwards. I am not going to be that same person that I've been for 40-something years. No way. So growing up in an LDS family, I got out of the church at age 13. And a lot of things I didn't believe. Some things I did. And something kept telling me I needed to hit my knees. And I was so ashamed and so embarrassed to hit my knees to talk to somebody that we don't see. We've only heard about, right? And I finally did. I hit my knees. I started praying to God. I was bawling the whole time, going, I need direction. I don't know what to do. I asked you to help me. I didn't expect you to help me by losing my job, right? After I prayed, I kept thinking again, what is it? Which direction do I go? I've always been one who has taken care of myself physically. I had let myself go because every weekend was party. I was 198 pounds. I've never weighed that much. I had a double chin. If I looked down, I couldn't see my toes. And I looked in the mirror and I thought I looked great. And I thought, you know what? My wife bought me a mountain bike. I'm going to jump on that bike and I'm just going to take off. And I did. And I rode around the block. And I did this for a couple weeks. Started feeling really good. Before I knew it, I was doing a mile. Then I was doing 3 miles. Then I was doing 5 miles. Then I was doing 6 miles. And I started losing the weight. And my mind started focusing, because now my mind's starting to clear up because I'm not fogging it with cocaine 2 days a week. Lots of cocaine 2 days a week, right? I was staying focused. I was starting to really look at life. And I started doing little odd end jobs just to help bring money in, because my wife now was holding everything down with finances. We ended up losing our house in 2010, a little over a year after I had lost my job. As I was coming out of my stuff, she started going into hers. And hers was alcohol. I noticed when we had parties, it just wasn't mixing a drink anymore. It was grabbing the bottle and just guzzling out of the bottle. And I'm like, yep, this isn't her. Things are changing. She went into a long time battle with alcohol while I was working on becoming somebody totally, totally different. And I think also, you know, we talked about before the show, Shannon, when you start opening your mind and you start looking at life in a different way, certain things start happening in your life for the good.
Yes, very much so.
We started selling insulation. We had a thing here in Utah that we did a home energy conservation. You'd go in and inspect attics, and if it didn't have the right amount of insulation, you could offer more insulation to be put in these family homes, and it wouldn't cost them a dime because the gas companies and electric companies would help pay for it. Plus, you'd get a little bit of kickback as a homeowner. So you were actually getting paid to put insulation in your attics. And I went to this lady's house in a place called West Valley, which is northwest of where I grew up. I inspect her attic. She passes. I said, can we sit down somewhere and do the paperwork? And she goes, yeah, sit down at my kitchen table. And I remember her name still. Her name was Bibi. And I get her utility bills and I'm writing down all this information. And she looks at me and she goes, Al, could I give you a book? And I said, Bibi, thank you very much, but I'm not a reader. I continue to do my paperwork. She goes, Al, something's telling me to give you a book. I said, Bibi, again, thank you so much. I am not a reader. It just really bores me. I continue to do the work again. All of a sudden, out of the blue, she literally scared the crap out of me. She goes, Al. And I'm like, what? My gosh. And she goes, you either take this effing book or you get your effing paperwork, pick everything up and get the hell out of my house. And I mean, she was dead serious. And I'm going, oh my gosh. And I'm going, Bibi, she goes, I'm serious. You get your shit out of here and get out of my house or you take this book. And I'm like, okay. I'll take the book because I needed the sale. I needed to make some money. It was an Eckhart Tolle book, The New Earth.
Oh.
And I'm like, and she signs it, right? She signs it. She opens it up and she goes, something told me to give you this book. You better read it. Love, Bibi. Now, at this time, we were living at a friend's house in his basement because, again, we couldn't afford to get an apartment. We had nowhere to go. That book sat on his kitchen bar for like 2 months. One day I finally picked it up and I started reading it. I'm going, oh my gosh, this is interesting. I started getting involved with the local chambers, Chamber of Commerce. I decided to join get involved with the West Jordan Chamber because this is where I grew up, right? I ended up going to a luncheon. They have a lady comes in and talks about how she can read people and she knows what they're thinking and facial expressions and so on. And she has a drawing. So I put my insulation business card in the drawing. Guess who wins? I do. Guess what I won? Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. And I'm like, Oh my flipping hell.
Read the damn book, Al.
Right? So I'm like, okay, Father, I get it. You're trying to tell me something, right? Now, here's something that's really funny. On my computer, all of a sudden on these emails, I started getting this law of attraction stuff on my emails. And I'm like, where the hell is this coming from? Me, being as naive as I was, I thought it was a dating site, the law of attraction. So every time it popped up, I'm like, delete, 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 because I'm married, right? I'm no way my wife's catching me looking at a dating site. Delete, delete, delete. One day I go to hit delete and it opens it up and I'm like, what the heck is this? And I started going through it and I'm going, oh my gosh, this isn't a dating site. And I started reading about the law of attraction and you know, drawing in the universe and the power. And then I'm reading it in these books and I'm going, oh my gosh, everything's coming together. All this happened in 2009. Here it is 14 years later. And now here I am doing what I do. I'm in the recovery community. My wife still continued to go through her alcoholism, which took me down a really bad road. So bad in 2019, I was on my way home from a networking group to go home and get my pistol. And I was going to go up into our beautiful mountains and I was going to take my life because I couldn't handle coming home to what I was coming home to every single day. I had become addicted to my wife's addiction. My life revolved everything around her addiction. And I don't know if I would have ever went through with it. And I'm so glad I didn't have that opportunity to find out. On my way home, I was going down the road and my phone rang and I picked it up. And I can't remember what the call was about. I hung up and my screenshot on my phone was the picture of my two daughters and three beautiful grandkids. And I broke down and I started crying and I was crying so hard. I had to pull over because I couldn't see the road. And I'm thinking, this is BS. I'm thinking about taking my life and stealing time that my daughters and my grandkids have with me because of what's happening in my home. No way. No way. This isn't going to happen. And I sat off the side of the road, I don't know for how long, finally got my composure. I had a friend who is retired now. She worked for the West Jordan Police Department. She started a peer support program to help our first responders with suicide and depression and things. And I called her up and I said, Holly, I need help. And I need help quick. And I told her what had just happened. And she goes, okay, Al, first thing you need to do is you need to get yourself out of the situation. It just happened to work out. I went home. My wife was drunk as hell. It was like walking into World War II again. Picked up the phone, called 911. Unified Police was over within about 5 minutes. She started getting the cop's face, handcuffed. Off she went to jail. Peace. I had peace. I was able to focus and concentrate on what I needed to do. I was able to break the lease in my apartment. I went and found me another apartment. I wanted to get out of there. And I just started on this whole journey again of rebuilding myself. It was almost like I had read a couple books in this journey. And by now, like I said, it was from 2009. This is 2019. It's taken me that long, 10 years. And here I am now writing another whole chapter of my life. And I was able to really start learning a little bit more about me, who I am as an individual. And the people that know me now, when I tell them this story, or if they hear me talk when I do my public speaking and stuff, they're like, Al, I've known you for 8-9 years. There's no way you used to be this type of individual. And I'm like, no, I'm dead serious. And thank you for saying there's no way, because that means I've grown. That means I've changed. That means whatever I've been working on is working. Mm-hmm. It's changed me. Mm-hmm. I'm now known as somebody that has a ton of integrity, someone people can count on. If someone calls me and says, Al, I need help, I'm not sitting on my couch watching TV going, no, drinking a beer, I'm too busy. You know, really, I'm watching football or NASCAR, but I'm too busy. I can't help you. Now it's like, what is it that you need? What can I do for you? You know, you need help with something. You need some. Okay, I'll be there in 15 minutes or whatever it may take. So this whole journey that I've been on has just transformed me, and I've been able to meet some of the most amazing people in my life. You know, I've had the opportunity to meet you, Shannon, and to meet Steve, and so many other people. And when I started doing my show and my public speaking, oh my gosh, it's my therapy.
Yeah. I agree with you when you say it's your therapy, because there's so many things. Well, I've learned so much from you. You've learned so much from me. And there, like I had said earlier, it's a really wonderful world, and it's a wonderful feeling that when you do find your purpose in life and how you can help others, you know, to become the best version of them. It's the greatest gift, I truly believe, that we can give to ourselves, number one, but also to others as well.
Yeah. And you were so spot on with that, Shannon, because, you know, I tried for years to help my wife with her addiction. And one of her therapists said, Al, there's nothing you can do. And I'm like, BS, you watch me. You watch me. I'm going to fix her, right? Like, she's broken. I'm going to fix her. I'll get her back to where she is. Took me 3 years to figure it out. And what I figured out, I couldn't even help myself.
Exactly.
How was I supposed to help her if I couldn't even help myself? Mm-hmm. And once I figured that out, at least I knew a direction to go. And I continue to start working on me, because that's a whole nother book, right? Writing one.
Can I say something? I've had so many people that have talked to me, and their biggest advice is, what is it? Because they have somebody, whether it's, I actually was sitting in a health clinic this morning with my son, walk-in clinic. And this lady was sitting beside me, and we got talking away. She's seeing that I'm writing, and she's like, oh my goodness, you've got the most beautiful writing. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. Anyways, then she asked me what I do. And I, you know, I told her that I'm getting into public speaking, and I got to have a podcast, and I wrote a book and all this other stuff. And like, I was open and honest. Yeah. I said that, you know, I was addicted to alcohol for many years. And then, you know, I started talking to her about identity and all this other stuff. Right. And then she goes, oh my gosh, she goes, I know why you're sitting beside me. And I'm like, well, what, why do you think you're sitting beside me? And then she started talking about her past. And then she started talking about her youngest daughter. So she was married to an alcoholic for many years, very abusive towards her. And now the alcoholism is now has generationally down, gone into her daughters, all three daughters. But she said that her third daughter has got the most problems with alcohol. And she goes, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do or what direction I should be going. And I said to her, you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I said, you can't do anything. She has to figure that out on her own. Number one, she needed to hear that. And then number two, I said, but you know what? Maybe it's not you're sitting here beside me. It's not because of your daughter. I said, where do you come in? Where does your importance come in? Where does your value come in? And she just kind of looked at me, and she got really teary-eyed, right? And I said, you matter in all of this. I said, I think why you're talking to me is because of you. It has nothing to do with anybody else. And we talked a little bit more. And at the end of the conversation, she's like, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I was like, you're very, very welcome. And I run into conversations like this all the time. And I know 100% that you would as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to give her that, number one, I gave her the chance to actually speak, because you could tell she hadn't spoken for years, but she was very comfortable with me because my vulnerability showed through. And that we had talked about that as well. The more vulnerable that we are, right, the more that we transform into that individual that we're supposed to be, which will also add to the transformation of other people, because they will transform through us transforming ourselves. And that I could really resonate with that woman today. And it was just the most beautiful experience. And it's those beautiful experiences that we're going to continue to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. And it is, right? You have a feeling that goes through you that you've not ever felt. And I tell you what, there is no drug, no substance, no nothing that, in my eyes, at least for me, that has ever replaced it. And it's that same feeling, right? Because those of us who have battled with drugs or alcohol, that first feeling, we don't ever get that again. We're always chasing that same feeling, right? And that's what gets us so deep, because we're always doing more to try to get that same feel. I want to feel that again. So we start snorting more cocaine or start drinking more alcohol. However, when we have that feeling of an experience with what just happened to you today, it's the same feeling. And sometimes it's stronger because it feels so good.
To give myself and my vulnerability to somebody else, I think it is tenfold of any time I was ever drunk.
Yeah.
The power that you've got within and to know that is just overwhelming. It's beyond beautiful. And yeah, it was such a powerful moment. And just to know that I was, you know, helping this woman. And I'm guaranteed she's probably thinking about me right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what the ripple effect is, but guaranteed she's probably, you know, she's probably looking at life just a little bit differently, you know, and that's what matters. Oh, Al, your journey has been just so amazing. So through this journey of yours, what is it that is, what is the most important thing that you really feel that you have taken out of all of this? The most important thing for you. There's so many with you. It's
there is. And the thing that comes to mind, it's the emotions that are coming up. I've learned how to love myself really for the first time, right? I always thought Al was number one in the wrong way. I love who I am. I love who I have become. I have to be very, very careful, because our egos like to creep in and start trying to put us up on a pedestal. I don't want to be on a pedestal. I want to be right here. I want to be right here with everyone else, and I want to help as many people as I possibly can. So I would have to say I've learned how to love myself. Mm-hmm. Because now that I've known how to do that, my hand and my arm reaches so much further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely it has. My second question that I'm going to ask you is, anybody that's listening to this podcast and they can resonate with you on so many different levels and they're going through the process of addiction, whether it be substance or drugs or whatever it is, what advice would you give to them? And it may not be them having that addiction themselves. It could also be them.
Yeah.
Be you know, a loved one has the addiction.
Well, I would say a few things. Self-care, mm-hmm. whether you're on the other side or not. Self-care, that self-love. Work on listening to your subconscious, right? Our subconscious doesn't know what's real and what's a lie. It's just there to protect us. We will fall back into some negative thoughts because our subconscious is going to do what it can to protect us. What I like to tell people at the end of my talks, especially when I'm at recovery centers, you're not your mistakes.
You're not.
You are not your failures, and you are not your past.
Mm-hmm. That's huge right there. Yeah.
And I like to say too, my amazing moments in life didn't come from my amazing moments. My amazing moments came from my failures. They came from my wrong choices. They came from my mistakes. That's what grew me. And I finally learned how to accept it and deal with it and not stay stuck with it. Because society has a way of shaming us, of feeling guilty because we cry, especially with men. They have a way of saying we're not supposed to be angry. We're not supposed to be sad. We're not supposed to be depressed. Well, why the hell did God give us all these emotions? And if we're not able to do them, so feel them. Just don't get stuck there. Work yourself through it. Allow yourself that time to go through whatever you're going through. Listen to it. Look at the lesson. Everything has a lesson behind it. Everything. It's the message in the mirror. Look in the damn mirror and look at yourself in the eyes and go, okay, why did I just experience this? Why? And if you can't figure it out, it's okay. It's not time, but continue to think on it. And before you know it, you will figure out what the lesson is. And the reason why I put it that way, I had a guest on my show who has become a very, very good friend of mine, Nicholas T. Smith. He started on Facebook, A Tribe of Giants, which you can find at people all over the world are on this Facebook page. I mean, literally all over the world. And he goes, Al, I want you to connect the dots of your life backwards. And he goes, really think about it. And he goes, you will find you're exactly where you are supposed to be this very moment. And after the show, on the way home, I really started thinking about it. And I started spending a lot of time thinking about just even what was shared today, right? And he was 100% right. I'm exactly where I am supposed to be in my life this very moment. Everything I went through was preparing me and grooming me to be here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I still have a lot more dots mm-hmm. to step before I get here.
And now that you're in this moment right now, because that was a huge epiphany for me. I was just like, wow, because I could see where I was and I could see every chapter, every stage in my life, right up until today. And I've been divinely guided. And I also now too, that everything that I endured in my past, number one, I do embrace it. There's no question about it. But every single thing is a learning lesson. And it's in those learning lessons that the gift from my higher power gave me.
Yes.
You know, people don't look at it that way. They don't look at it.
Oh, they look at it as a curse.
Yes, but you have to look at it as it is a gift. It is a gift. And when you can shift that perspective and see that, it's like your whole world will open up. It's like, wow, holy smokes, because it is. And that's also self-acceptance and love for yourself. And I don't think you can really see that. You had talked about love for yourself. You will not see that until you have the love for yourself, because that's when you can take ownership and responsibility, and then you can embrace all of that, right? But the number one thing when you love yourself, which you know too, clarity. There's no doubt. The clarity is there. It is there because you also know that you have full control of yourself too. Your destiny.
Yeah. Yeah. 100% true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even my mom asked me today, you know, I was helping with my mom with some stuff. And she's like, are you okay? And I said, right now, no, I'm not. I've got a lot of emotions going on because of things that are happening in my life. And I says, you know what? I'll be okay. I just got to work through it is all right. I got to work through it. And again, I got to figure out what the lesson is behind it too. And I've already got some light coming in. I'm already starting to see some of the stuff. But yeah, just allow yourself to go through it. And again, you have that self-love. It does start helping ease a lot of the pain.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And that's why I absolutely love this passion project of mine. You are not the only one, because that's what people need to understand. When you get brought to those moments of silence, which is happening like your experience today, you know, that's when you're going to learn. That's when there is that divine connection between you and the universe. And if you look into yourself with your stillness, you're going to be guided properly. And, you know, just the trusting and knowing that there are changes coming. And, you know, even though you don't see that the changes right now could be for your higher good, they are always for your higher good if you go with what's happening with inside. I mean, that's something that I really want people to understand, because most people, unless they have that spiritual awareness, they run from it. They run. And no, you do the opposite. You sit in it.
Yeah, 100% right. You know, it's we analyze it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we use our brains instead of our hearts and our body.
Yeah.
Right? We're not to be programmed like that. It's the opposite. We're supposed to feel and communicate with our hearts and our body, not with our mind.
Yeah. So if you have a thought, you know, I had someone teach me this, and he told me, he goes, Al, he calls them angels, and I call them angels now, either that or my Holy Spirit. And I'm not talking religion, right? Religion is completely out of the way. Spirituality. Yeah. This is what I'm saying. When my head says, go here, I go there. I don't go, well, no, I really want to go here, right? I follow what it's telling me. And how many times it's happened, I know it's happened to everyone. You're driving home, you're programmed to go a certain way, right? And you're so used to going that way. But one day, all of a sudden, your head says, turn here, and you turn, and you go down the road about a mile, and you're going, what the hell am I doing? Why did I turn here? There's a reason behind that. Yeah, you may have just avoided being in an accident, right? That's your guidance. Your angel, however you want to look at it, has guided you away from wherever could have been harmful, or maybe not. It's just, this is the direction you were supposed to go. But when you start analyzing it, we start questioning the truth, because again, this is not religion. However you want to look at it, for me, my higher power is God. God is love. It's 100% love. Mm-hmm. I told a buddy once, I said, God is so mad at me. That's why I'm going through all this. He goes, God isn't mad at you. You know, he's like, you're mad at yourself is what's going on. You're beating up yourself, because God is love. Everything good comes from God. So if you're going through this, it's not God that put you here. You may have put yourself there. He's going to help you get out. However, you still got to take the effort of making that first step.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're getting to the end of the interview here, and there's the last question is kind of combined together. So I want to ask you, where are you now in your life? And, you know, what would be the closing and final words that you would want to let everybody know? Like, I know that you're doing a lot of amazing things out there, and whatever you say now are going to be put into the podcast notes.
Okay. Wow. My gosh. Where I'm at now is somewhere I would have never thought I would have been almost 3 years ago. I mean, seriously, I started the podcast in my public speaking. I started my public speaking right at the beginning of 2020 in February. And then, of course, March hit and everything was being shut down, no public events. Throughout the whole year of 2020, I don't know if maybe some of the listeners will get it, but you know how sometimes people just irritate you, or your siblings, where they're constantly poking you in the rib or tapping you on the back of the head, and it's irritating. That's what it was like for me. Something was saying there was something else I needed to do, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And right around the beginning of 2021, I was talking with somebody and they started talking about podcasts. I'm like, podcasts? What's podcasts? And they're like, what, you don't listen to podcasts? I'm like, no, that's why I'm asking you. What is it? They're like, oh my gosh, you can find all kinds of subjects and they talk about it and different things. I'm like, whoa, okay, well, this sounds interesting. So I started looking into podcasts. And I don't remember the first one that I watched. And I'm like, this is really cool. As soon as I got done, right just like that, a title came up, The Other Side of Addiction. And I'm going, okay, well, is that my journey, right? Is this where I'm supposed to go? And I happened to run into a gentleman that I know, and he's like, Al, what's up? What's been going on in your life? And I told him, and I says, gosh, I've been thinking about starting a podcast. And he goes, oh, seriously? He goes, I know a guy that has a radio station and does podcasts on his radio station. And I'm like, really? So he introduces me to this guy, and I tell this guy my idea, and he loved it. Well, I don't have money. So he's like, we'll go find a sponsor. I'll take a certain percentage of it. I'll give you the rest. I went to a gentleman who owns a coffee shop here. I knew him from my chamber days. Again, connect the dots backwards. He has addiction in his family. He says, come back tomorrow. How much do you need? And I told him, and he says, well, actually, come back in 2 days. I'll have a check for you. A week and a half later, I was recording my first show. What this show has done for my life today, 220 episodes. I've interviewed people from Canada, the UK, all over the United States, a Hollywood movie star, Breanne Davis. I've been on the phone with Les Brown, talking to him, working on trying to get him on the show. It has changed my life. It has made me a person who I never, ever thought I would become because of sitting down with individuals like yourself, Shannon, and hearing people of what they've gone through in their life and what they've overcome, the resilience that they've gone through. And I am so happy where I'm at in my life. Financially, I'm not where I need to be. I'm still barely keeping my chin above water 14 years later after losing my job. However, I would not go back to that job if they offered it to me, because where I'm at in my life right now and the people that I get to hang with, it's the most amazing thing I've ever felt in my life. And it's brought me back. It's brought me back spiritually. Again, not religiously. I don't go to church. My church is the mountains here in Utah. I spend many Sundays hiking up there, and some of the spiritual awakenings and things that I've had happen to me up there, that's God's church right there. I don't need to walk into a building and have someone tell me that God loves me and Jesus loves me. They tell me themselves when I'm up there in those mountains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing, Al. I want to thank you so much. Like this was wonderful. Just the whole process of where you are, or where you were to where you are now. This is really going to resonate with a lot of people out there. Definitely a story of inspiration. But this time, I want to thank you for definitely being a part of my journey and just getting to know you on a totally different level. The meet and greets are so different compared to what we actually experienced and what we're going through right now at this moment in the present time. So I want to thank you so much for being on my podcast. It means
Thank you for the offer. I really do appreciate it.
You are very welcome. I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode. And please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram. And if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.